91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This hour is devoted to the bicycle as a big part of South Florida transportation solutions. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Perhaps pedaling up San Francisco-style hills would be a drag, but way more San Franciscans bike to work than folks in, say, Fort Lauderdale. Flatter than Kansas, South Florida is a bike rider's dream, but only a small percentage of workers use human-powered wheels to get to work. Get this, it costs some 76 cents per mile to tool around in an SUV, but only about 10 cents a mile for bikes. You may get caught in a South Florida downpour sometimes or be a little sweaty, but riding a bike to work will surely burn calories. So stay tuned. Topical Currents up next after the news. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, it's today's Topical Currents, Tuesday edition. This hour we consider South Florida's efforts to put more people on bicycles to get to work, to school, or to run errands. Despite a relatively flat terrain, South Florida ranks poorly in bike-friendly attributes.
We have three experts on hand. First is Florida Department of Transportation District 6 Secretary Jim Wolfe. He has nearly four decades in the transportation field. His FDOT District 6 comprises Miami-Dade and Monroe counties. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
We also say hello to the Executive Director of the Miami-Dade Metropolitan Planning Organization. She's Eileen Boucle. She has 20 years of transportation experience and addresses all modes of transit in the county. Thanks for being with us once again, Eileen.
Thank you for inviting me.
Also in the studio is the Bicycle Pedestrian Coordinator and Intermodal Manager at the Miami-Dade Transportation Planning Organization, David Henderson. He's a past president of the Florida Bicycle Association as well. Welcome to you, David.
Thank you.
Good to have you all. Let's talk about Copenhagen. So this study that is supported by the Knight Foundation. It's an innovation of 880 cities, is it called? So we'll start with you, Secretary Wolf. Tell us, you attended. Tell us about your experience.
It was a great experience. First, 880 is not that many cities. It's a philosophy that a city should be appropriate for people from 8 to 80. And I don't think they mean to exclude outside that, but there's a point being made there. And it's very true about our transportation facilities. They need to serve all peoples and all modes, and they need to fit in with the environment.
So talk about the study and talk about what you did in Copenhagen and how and what you learned.
We went to Copenhagen because they're a role model. They start out, obviously, as a European city with European traditions. But around 1990, they looked at the auto-centric mode that they had become and decided to deliberately change. And they've become an extremely bike-friendly city. There are as many people commuting on bicycle than there are in automobiles. It's about one-third bicycle, one-third transit, one-third automobile. That's phenomenal. We just had to go see how they did this.
So, Eileen Boucle, you also were on that study. You also went to Copenhagen. Did it inspire you in many ways?
Absolutely it did.
And tell us what we were talking about. So before you went, you didn't own a bike.
That's correct.
Okay.
You had some training.
Right.
Yes.
I agreed to form this team because I thought it was very important that Miami had an opportunity, a core team from Miami had an opportunity to go to Copenhagen and see this best practice in the world and how the system is integrated and applied for pedestrian and bicyclists and vehicular traffic. So upon learning that we won, it was competitive. Many teams across the nation competed to go. Upon learning that we won, my husband went and bought bicycles for us, and we started practicing every spare moment so I could be ready for this. And I've never stopped bicycling since then. So it's had a profound impact, and especially from the professional perspective as to how their approach to designing bicycle and pedestrian amenities.
So how much biking did you do in Denmark on the trip?
Every single day from morning to night, rain through rain, all conditions. We also used their transit system, and really...
Wasn't it like 30 miles a day or something?
Yeah. I stopped counting after the first hour and just focused on survival the first few hours. But no, it was just what we did. Yeah. So it was wake up, find your bike, and go to the first meeting.
Jim Wolf, you were describing about the people riding the bike to work. They're just average people. We have the image of the Tour de France and somebody's with their rear end up and their head down in this very uncomfortable position. But this definitely is a comfortable ride that they do. There's no rush.
They ride sturdy bicycles and they sit upright. Most of the people are not particularly fast. They're just trying to get to work. They're trying to get to the store. It's a transportation mode. We hear, we think of categorizing bicyclists as recreational or adult and child, or some people actually want to get to work. And these vast numbers of people cycling in Copenhagen are taking it seriously as a way to get to work.
Let's bring David Henderson into it. He's obviously has a passion for bicycles. Yes, David?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Let me ask you, what are the greatest challenges? So Jim Wolf said they decided in the 90s, Denmark did, or Copenhagen, they're going to become a more bicycle, you know, centric culture. How do we do that in South Florida?
Well, I think a big part of the solution is really based on the context. I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all or, you know, every neighborhood is different. I think the approach that Miami Beach takes is going to be very different from what the city of Miami does and what Homestead might do versus what Doral does. I mean, you know, certainly the land use, the development patterns play a big role, the amount of density,
right,
the proximity of people's houses to where they can shop and where they can do other recreation or go to work. All of that makes a big difference in the success that a city is going to have or a neighborhood is going to have in becoming more bike-friendly. I think one of the things that they found in Copenhagen and in a lot of European cities is that land use side, that growth management side, became really, really important and had to be an important part. It's not just about building bike lanes or trails or anything like that.
So, again, in South Florida, we don't really have that mentality.
Well, I think a lot of cities are changing. I mean,
the municipalities, you mean? Okay, yeah. I mean, I can see it in Coconut Grove or Coral Gables or, as you say, Miami Beach. But what about Miami? You know,
the city of Miami is developing. I mean, you know, the Brickell area,
right here around
your building here on North West 15th Street, is you know, developing very quickly. And within just a couple of years, you're going to have a lot of people who are living here,
yes,
and will have access, very short distance access, to both practical destinations but also recreational things. I mean, if you lived here, you know, you'd be, what, 3 blocks away from the Venetian Causeway to be able to get across to the beach, all of the other stuff that's happening around the Omni area and the Arts Center. You know, you would be crazy if you lived around here and you drove to all those destinations.
Oh, yeah.
Jim Wolf, in Copenhagen, I assume they have suburban areas, of course. They must have a great tandem where you can get on rapid transit with your bike and then go the short hop to your office building or school. Is that how it works? And that's something we need here. It's really a total rapid transit system.
It's very interesting. Sweden, Malmo, Sweden, is just across a narrow body of water. It's about a half-hour train ride from Copenhagen. A lot of people commute from Sweden to Copenhagen to work. And we went there one day to the Malmo train station, and they had sophisticated parking for over 2,000 bicycles. And that was commuters in Malmo, Sweden, would ride their bike to the train station, park, take the train into work. And this also was happening from to Copenhagen from rural Copenhagen within Denmark. On
so
a Sunday,
they keep the bike parked there.
The bike parked
instead
there.
Of taking it
instead
on the train.
Of the car, or instead of bringing.
If you take transit, it may not take you door to door. And we talk about the last mile. How do you do the last mile? Or it could be the first mile. So they're taking a bicycle and doing the first and last mile. In downtown Copenhagen, we went to one of the train stations on Sunday morning. It was raining. Why would anyone be out? There were 2,000 bicycles parked there. Mm. And the reason was these bikes live there. Someone in the suburbs comes in on the train to the train station, and then they do the last 2 miles to work on a bicycle that they leave downtown.
Let's open the phones and, you know, get your feelings about this. Do you currently bike in South Florida? What's your experience with that? And would you bike if it were a little safer to do so? Would you even consider giving up your automobile? Our number is 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Our email is radio@wlrn.org.
David Henderson, can you tell us a little bit more about, of course, speaking from your vantage point in Miami-Dade County, but how many bike miles do we have now, and what would be projected in the future?
There are about 250 miles of roads that have some kind of a bike lane or some kind of designated facility on it, and there are about 150 miles of separated paths, mostly along canals or underneath Metrorail, or we talked about the Atlantic Trail along Miami Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the TPO's five-year transportation plan, we're going to be building about, or there are projects in that plan that will build about another 75 miles of roads with bike lanes. We'll add bike lanes to about 75 miles of roads. And about another 50 miles of separated trails.
Something you said earlier is really interesting. Give us the rules about bikes in the county and the various municipalities as far as riding on the sidewalk.
Well, so under Florida state law, bikes are treated as vehicles when they're riding on the road. And a bicyclist is expected to follow all the same rules.
So to stop at red lights, to yield,
ride
to
in the same direction, right? Yeah,
okay.
Stay on the right, pass on the left, all of those.
Okay.
Bikes are also allowed to ride on the sidewalk unless it's prohibited by the local jurisdiction. And so
which
there are
would
a
require
few places.
Signage then.
Right, right. The local government would have to pass an ordinance. I think the one you always hear about is Bal Harbour.
Right, you can get ticketed for riding on the sidewalk in Bal Harbour. However, in Bal Harbour, there are no bike lanes.
On A1A,
Collins.
That's right.
No,
that's right.
There are not.
They're doing a nice job with that path along the beach, though.
Yes, yes, they did a great job. Well, they prohibited biking on the beach for a while. And
but that's
they
what
just
we were talking about.
It.
What are the rules as far as once a bike is on the sidewalk?
So when you are on the sidewalk, the rule is actually very simple. It's yield to pedestrians.
Okay.
It's you're a person riding a bike, yields to anyone that's walking, and in fact, both to be safe and to be courteous, you should really be riding at about walking speed, because somebody pulling out of a driveway, pulling out of turning out of off the street onto the sidewalk, usually isn't expecting to see someone riding a bike at a faster speed.
Or if necessary, walk the bike.
Or walk at yourself.
Yeah.
But if you are riding, it's important to recognize that space has been designed for somebody moving at pedestrian speed, and so that's really the safest way to use
it. One of the things that made us feel more comfortable riding in Copenhagen was the drivers. They were looking for bicycles, and they were yielding. They did not have right turn on red downtown. It just felt like they were going to see us. I don't always feel that riding in South Florida.
I have about eight people lined up here on the phone
lines. Oh, very good.
Dangers of cycling in South Florida.
Yeah, I mean, what about the drivers texting? I mean, how often do you see drivers texting and driving?
After long years of improving crash data, the last 3 years have ticked upward nationwide.
Right.
And we're just confident in the business. This is distracted driving. It's more people looking at their cell phones. It's very dangerous, but not only for the people that are in the car. It's very dangerous for cyclists.
And pedestrians. We're going to take a short break. We're talking about biking. We're going to ask you to be patient on those phones because we have a lot of calls, as Joe said, and emails. We're speaking about the possibility of biking in South Florida, becoming a more bike-centric culture. And we're speaking with Jim Wolf. He's the secretary of the Florida Department of Transportation, District 6. Also with us, the executive director of the Miami-Dade Metropolitan Planning Organization, Eileen Boucle. And David Henderson is the bicycle pedestrian coordinator and intermodal manager at Miami-Dade Transportation Planning Organization. We'll be right back.
And we're back with today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We're talking about commuting and bicycles in South Florida. Of course, course, we have Jim Wolf, Eileen Boucle, and David Henderson. Again, our number, if you'd like to join in, 1-800-743-9576, and email is radio@wlrn.org. Eileen, let's talk about the grade levels that you observed in Denmark, the different grade levels for even pedestrians versus bicyclists.
Yeah, so it certainly enhanced my feeling of safety when I was on the bicycle in Copenhagen. At no time was I sharing the road, if you will, with a car or a bus, nor was I sharing a road with a pedestrian. I had my own grade-separated bicycle lane almost at all times. In those areas where there were no designated bicycle lane, you were sharing the road and everyone followed the rules. But I felt safe because here in South Florida, you know, it's very intuitive for all of us when we're pedestrians to be on a sidewalk. We already understand the concept of being on a grade separated facility mm-hmm. by virtue of being on a sidewalk. Cars accept that. Pedestrians accept that. Neither car nor pedestrian expect that we would be sharing that. And so Copenhagen just takes it one step further. So that expectation is there not just for the pedestrian and the car, but also for the bicycle.
So is that feasible that we could do that in South Florida? And who will pay for all this?
You know, I mean, we're constantly updating our roadways, resurfacing, reconstruction, updating. We're always needing to improve our roads. And I think as we're doing that, we should be looking at how we could be introducing anything that would take us one step forward in terms of safety and increasing mobility options for bicyclists. And I think that's something that this team here today is focused on. You know, in what areas can we look at areas like universities where you have a lot of students that could benefit mm-hmm. if they do have that option and feel safe to use it and connect to transit and these types of, it's definitely multi-jurisdictional, multi-agency. You need to bring everyone to the table and look at these areas around the county where we could start introducing these concepts, something we're already doing now.
Is there a lot of support from the community at large, from all these different areas and different sectors?
Well, no, actually, you know, it's kind of interesting. It really depends on where you're at. There are some areas, and I think Jim can share many stories, that the state, on a state road where there's a construction project coming up, where the stakeholders along the corridor do not want a bicycle lane, especially if that means that you have to sacrifice the parking lane or in any way affect access in some way. So, and then you go to other areas where you have more support. So it's not an all or nothing. It depends on what community mm-hmm. you're in. But there is a state law that requires that the state look at incorporating that bicycle component on all projects as they proceed. But, you know, the public is a big part of it. The stakeholders, their input, and what they want to see in the project.
Is that just on new projects, or would it be revitalizing existing roads?
I'll give you an example. Calle Ocho. We're doing a project development study right now, and we're getting citizen input. We start by looking at a large number of alternatives, and we get feedback on what the community wants. And it's always about trade-offs when you have an existing corridor. Right now, Calle Ocho is three lanes in one direction, mm-hmm. parking on both sides, and sidewalks. So you've got 80 feet to work with, and that's it. What are you going to do with that 80 feet? You can take one lane away and have only two lanes, and the traffic will all slow down. But what do you do with that one lane? You can put in bike lanes, or you can have wide sidewalks, or you can put in an exclusive express bus lane, and you can put in a median, you can put in more landscaping. But you can't do all of these things. So a lot of times when you look at urban transportation design, it's a matter of trade-off. So we hear from all the constituencies, and we make choices.
I'm just, you know, in New York City, if they can take away a lane or two in New York City, which they did, like on Broadway and 7th Avenue, around there, I mean, we can do it here, certainly. We have far fewer cars.
Most of the options on Calle Ocho look at taking a lane away with predictable consequences for the projected traffic.
And out west on 8th Street, the traffic is horrendous at all hours of the day.
Yeah. One option being looked at is, and of course, taking parking away is not feasible.
Right.
There's a big constituency for that. But another option is have three lanes, but make one of them parking for like 23 hours a day, and during the a.m. peak, no parking. That way you get the lane during the peak period,
right,
and you get parking all the rest of the time. And now you've generated 10 feet to do something else with.
I mean, it's getting out of the sack to move your car.
Yeah, so this is a creative solution that is getting a little bit more support, but we're still looking at all the options.
When you say you're getting input from the citizenry, how do you get that? How do we go about that?
Normally, our engineers huddle for a couple of months, and then we have a public hearing and get input. Then we go change it, and we come back out. In this case, we also have a public advisory group, which the legislators and the county commissioner in the area have appointed people to, and we have met with them four or five times now to have feedback before we go out to the public with a public hearing.
Okay.
Let's take a few phone calls or so, some happy campers. Greg in Hollywood, you're up. Hi.
I'm on. Hey, thank you. I just want to say I commuted by bicycle my entire life in Connecticut, Massachusetts, Boston, New York City, and never had a problem. When I moved down here in 2002, I continued commuting 20 miles a day each way to work. And in 10 years, I was in three different accidents, never had a problem up north. But there's something about the mindset down here that, oh, you don't believe bicycles don't belong on the road. I was very good about following the rules, especially after I got a traffic ticket for gently going through a red light when there was no traffic coming or present. I was pulled over and given a ticket, a moving vehicle violation. But in all three of the accidents that I was in, the last one was so bad I woke up in the hospital unconscious. I mean, I came to in the emergency room hours later, didn't even know my name.
Greg, do you still ride now?
No, this was 2 years ago. I had to give it up because the last one was so bad. The bicycle was totaled, and in all of these accidents, the attitude of the law enforcement was, you know, you shouldn't be on the road. Even though I was in a designated bicycle lane, two times I was hit by a car, I was in the designated bicycle lane, right by a sign that says share the road.
Okay, Greg, we have a lot of calls.
I'm sorry, so I had to give up.
We get your point.
Three times, the next one would have been life. So now I'm driving, and I hate it. Thank you.
Sorry, okay. Greg. Okay, thanks for calling.
And we'll move along to Michael in Fort Lauderdale. Mike, you're up.
Yeah, I really appreciate all of the discussion about what we need to do with roads, what we need to do with infrastructure and things like that. But here in the subtropics, I'm someone who tries to cycle whenever I can. But so much of the problem for me is that I get to work and you wouldn't want to be someone who sat near me because I look and smell like I've just run a marathon. And so beyond the road infrastructure, I think there's also so much of kind of the cultural changes that need to happen. Most office buildings in South Florida don't have, for example, shower facilities.
Right. Everybody's aware of this. How do they manage this in other areas, although they have both hot and cold to deal with?
Secretary Wolf?
My building has a shower, and we allow our people to use it. It's uncommon down here, but you know what? It ought to be a serious feature when people are designing and operating office buildings to have a public shower.
And also, I mean, the trip to work is probably the most inconvenient or the most difficult trip to make by bike. I mean, people travel for all kinds of reasons: shopping, personal business, social, you know, visiting friends, entertainment. And generally, all of those destinations are much closer to a person's residence, and as far as scheduling is concerned, you know, you can schedule when you're going to visit your friends or schedule when you're going to go out to dinner. I always recommend to people that who are interested in becoming more physically active is don't focus on riding to work. Look at all of the other destinations, all the things you can do practically.
Errands.
Within a mile of your house. You know, think of it as a 1 mile challenge and say, oh, okay, well, I can, even if I can't buy 40 pounds of groceries at the store, riding to the store becomes a lot of fun.
Are there programs in the schools to urge?
Michael, thank you for calling. We agree with you. The culture needs to change.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any programs in the schools to encourage kids to ride their bikes? That takes a parents off from delivering and dropping off kids.
It also, though, is so scary, I'm sure, for parents to let their child ride to school
safety
on a bike. Yeah.
The University of Miami's Miller School of Medicine has developed a bike safe program that is offered both in Miami-Dade County Schools and also through the Miami-Dade Parks, and now they're expanding into the City of Miami Parks programs. It's very successful. It's developed by researchers, and so they're looking at what works. They're trying things out, education on kids, and they have both on-bike skill training, but also training about traffic and how to
navigate
be safe. Right.
We actually had Kirk Kaminer from communications coordinator at that program right in, and he tweeted it out.
Bicycle safety is a serious issue here in South Florida. We have one of the worst rates in the nation, and we look at that with the four E's: engineering, education, emergency services, and enforcement. And those aren't all under one agency. It's a partnership. The education element, FDOT is a partner in that as well. But we saw something really good in Copenhagen, and that was probably a one-quarter scale model of a road network with functioning traffic signals and marked bike lanes, and toddlers would be out there with their grandmothers or something learning bike safety. Mm-hmm. And they would stop, it's red, they would wait for the green, they would go. And it wasn't just this one instance, it was just an ethic. Were people going to learn proper motoring, proper walking, proper bicycling, and they were going to follow the rules?
And I want to add to Jim's point, because it was one of the top three observations that I had in Copenhagen, was the element of educational reinforcement. It's not just teaching kids how to ride bikes, but at all times when you're in Copenhagen, you're reinforced the rules of the road, if you will. You have these parks with these simulated small-scale intersections that are teaching children how to safely maneuver and use the bicycle lane, and you have signage and you have signals. You're constantly being reinforced educationally on how to share the road and use it safely. And also the element of public trust was another main observation. There's an expectation that people are going to follow the rules.
Simulated intersections in parks.
Yes, that's correct.
The traffic gardens, and they don't just do bicycling. They have little pedal cars, so they have kids that are driving, they have kids that are riding bikes, and they have and pedestrians too. And so it shows how they all interact together.
We're speaking about having a bicycle, more of a bicycle culture here in South Florida, with Jim Wolf. He is the Secretary of District 6 for FDOT. Also Eileen Bouclay, also David Henderson, and we'll be right back.
And we continue on our program today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Jim Wolf, Eileen Bouclay, and David Henderson. How about an emailer?
Let's, again, it's going to, we're going to try to get to as many as we can. Richard writes, I'm afraid to even bike in a bike lane in this day and age of drivers of cars texting. Are there any lengthy bike trails in the area that are not on the side of the road? Well, the one on the beach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Atlantic Trail, the runs from the Miami Beach Marina at South Point Park up to somewhere, I think, around 46th Street now, but the city is working on the extension that'll go all the way to the northern city limit and into Surfside and Bal Harbor.
Right.
It's beautiful. The Parks Department just a couple of years ago finished a couple of nice projects along the Black Creek Canal, the Black Creek Trail.
Where's that?
It goes from Black Point Marina down in Cutler Bay up to the Metro Zoo at 168th Street. That's very nice. There are a few street crossings, but they have safety features. And then also North Miami Beach and crossing over into Miami Gardens, there's a very nice trail along the Snake Creek Canal that goes from around West Dixie Highway in North Miami Beach, up, follows the canal underneath I-95 and goes off into Miami Gardens.
Okay.
And next caller, we have Peter in Miami. Peter, you're up. Hi.
Hi, thank you. This is a great topic, and there's a lot of projects that are coming online. There's the Plan Z over the Reckenbacker. There's the Miami Greenway next to the Miami River. There's the Underline that parallels US 1. And there's also the Ludlam Trail, which goes from the Miami Airport, King High Park, just south of the airport, straight south to Dadeland. It passes five schools, providing safe routes for kids to get to schools. And it also terminates at Dadeland, so people will be able to, commuters will be able to ride their bikes down to Dadeland, get on the train, and go downtown. So there's a lot of pending projects that, as long as the community is aware and informs their politicians that this is important for them, that we're going to see come online, creating safe routes and safe biking lanes for our community.
Okay, anyone?
Sure, let's talk about funding.
Talk
about that.
Thanks, Peter.
The underline is currently the impact. There's the impact there, but it it has issues that could be improved, and the underline would upgrade that into vibrant public spaces mm-hmm. with features that aren't just the path. The path itself would be improved. The crossings with the busy highways would be improved. Some places would have overpasses. But the problem, and it's a great project, and it's going to be great, it's going to happen, but it's going to cost $100 million. It's about $10 million a mile to accomplish the vision that Meg Daly and her team have for the underline. The legislature, in the recent session, the legislature passed $5 million special appropriation for the Ludlam Trail and $5 million special appropriation for the underline. And that's a lot of money that'll get a piece done, but they're still looking for more contributions from the county, the state, federal government, and the public. Believe it or not, you get the public. You get adjacent businesses, for instance. A new office building goes up, and it funds a little piece of the trail. So it's going to take a concerted effort and probably several years to get the entire vision accomplished, but it'll change the areas. Part of what the underline will do is create public space that merges into the adjacent land development and has a seamless flow. Great cities look like that. And I think it's an excellent vision.
Christopher wants to know, I know this isn't your region, if you know of any plans to connect the 17th Street Causeway to Point South of the Fort Lauderdale Airport. It's probably the most difficult area to navigate on a bicycle. Are you familiar with any of those plans?
I don't think there are any such plans, okay. But I've been not working in that area for the last 2 years, so I might be out of date, but that's the Port Everglades area,
right.
And you're not going to have a bike trail going through a security area.
Well. And we'll go on to more callers. We've got Margo in Miami. Margo, you're up. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have been commuting to work in Miami for the past year and a half using the city bike. And I found it to be really convenient because sometimes I bike to work and it's raining and I don't want to bike home. And so I can just take a ride share or something else. Also, you guys were saying maybe try.
Hello.
Near places that people go on the weekend. There's a bunch by the PAM, downtown, the beach. So I just wanted to encourage people that have maybe been a little bit wary of jumping on a bike to test the water with City Bike and look up the map and see what might be on their route.
That's a good idea, Margo. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, the shared bike programs have been really successful in a number of cities, the European ones in particular. Miami Beach has a very, very large shared bike program, and it's really changed things. You talk about drivers expecting to see bicyclists, making bikes conveniently available to people is something that has really done a lot for raising the number of people riding.
Robert writes, I've lived in many areas, South Florida, hands down the absolute worst for biking. I still do it. Group rides for recreational street cycling, dedicated trails for mountain biking, transportation for shorter distances, but there are no areas accessible from home for fun rides. I never go out for a fun ride on my own.
That's too bad. Yeah. Ken in Miami Beach. Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, I'm just calling. I wanted to follow up. Turns out your first caller had similar concerns regarding law enforcement's role in this, in cycling infrastructure. And I've been a bike commuter in Miami Beach for like 13 years now. I'm actually still recovering from a hit and run a year and a half ago where a Mini Cooper drove into me from behind at 40 miles an hour, fled the scene. And the Miami Beach police showed up and said, not our job, and left. They refused to talk to the witnesses. They refused to look at the video of the incident. They brushed it under the rug. The driver eventually turned herself in because the video got pretty popular online quickly. And they brushed it under the rug so that she received no punishment, just 12 hours of online driving classes. She didn't even get points in her license for nearly taking my life. And that's just one of a million incidents of where I've seen Miami Beach police not care about bike accidents. And I've been vocal about that for years. And 2.5 years ago, in an apparent retaliation, I was violently and unlawfully arrested by the police for riding a bicycle.
Ken, your story really hits home. It's a little off our topic. I think you need to take this up in other areas with the chief of police in Miami Beach. It's just really
you
nothing.
You won't talk about it.
There's really nothing anyone on this program can really do about this. We're talking about the practical ways of how to move on the bicycle, not the legal ramifications of your case. And we certainly are sympathetic to you. So thanks for calling.
Thanks for your time.
Hey, thank you, Ken.
Yeah, I think some of that has to do with attitude, and you can get the same issue with motorists, feeling that they don't need to share the road and the bicycles shouldn't be there. Well, the fact is the bicycles should be there and they should be made allowance for.
Right. And next caller, we've got number four?
Three. It's been waiting.
No. Remy and Perrine. Hey there.
Hi. I perfectly understand where a lot of the people are coming from. Rather than talk again about the dangers, there's a national group called Rails to Trail. We got a lot of train tracks all through Miami-Dade County that I don't know if they're really being used. Maybe that would make for a good connecting system. Hmm. So if you only have 10 miles to ride to work, it's completely doable. I just didn't want to get back because I, too, got hit by a car, but I don't want to even talk about that. And I'll take my response off the air.
Okay, thank you, Remy. Please.
So who owns the railroads? Jim? Is that the question?
Yeah. Well, you've heard about the Ludlam Trail being a pursuit of the county. It's actually a rail line owned by the FEC. For the first step in that process will be to buy the land from the FEC Railroad. A limitation of Rails to Trails is the rails are where they are. They may not have logical destination endpoints, but when we have an opportunity to pick up a 10-mile segment of good bicycle facility, we need to do that, and then we need to work on the connection so that we make a network.
We're speaking about bicycling in South Florida, and we'll take this last break, and we'll be back, try to take more of your calls and your emails. Stay with us. Welcome back to Tuesday's Topical Currents. We are talking about a bicycle-friendly culture here in South Florida, or dreams of having one, with the Florida Department of Transportation District 6 Secretary Jim Wolf. Also with us, Executive Director of the Miami-Dade Transportation Planning Organization, Eileen Boucle, and the Bicycle Pedestrian Coordinator and Intermodal Manager at the Miami-Dade Transportation Planning Organization. That's David Henderson. Eileen, I wanted to ask you about this Strategic Miami Area Rapid Transit Program and where that stands and what it is.
Sure. Since I was here last time when we first discussed it mm-hmm. online, the TPO board has prioritized 6 rapid transit corridors and 6 bus express corridors that are really subdivided into smaller routes. Since last year, the TPO board has prioritized and funded the environmental documents that are required in order to advance these projects. So the environmental documents are funded and are currently underway by various agencies, including our good partner, Florida Department of Transportation, who's doing 3 of the environmental studies, and Miami-Dade County Transportation and Public Works conducting the other 3 studies. This year, as we're now entering the midpoint of the environmental process, we're now looking at the next phase funding. And at last week's Miami-Dade Transportation Planning Organization, the board approved a funding allocation for the SMART plan from our federal urban funding allocation. So we're now working with that funding over a 30-year period to assess what that funding level means to our plan and how we can start to advance to the next phase, which is design and construction. And again, this is a multi-agency, multi-partnership. It's not just us and FDOT, but it's also Miami-Dade Expressway Authority. It's also the Florida Turnpike, the county, and all the municipalities along the corridors that we have been coordinating with and to advance these projects.
It's taking so much cooperation among intra-agency cooperation.
Absolutely. But I think we all share the one commonality that we're all stuck
to
in
improve.
Traffic. And we all want a solution.
South Florida, yeah.
So we're all motivated.
Exactly.
And next caller, we've got Jerry in Coral Gables. Hi. Coral Springs. Hi.
Hello. Is that Jerry?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Thank you for taking my call. My wife and I used to enjoy trail biking around our camp area when we lived there. But now living over here, I see bikes all over, and they're having problems with bike paths, and they need more and all, and I understand that. However, as I understand, our gas taxes pay for quite a bit of our road construction and maintenance. In Coral Springs, you're supposed to register your bike with the city, and in doing so, I think they should ask for a pittance from every bike owner and issue them a license plate, and they can pay part for their own bike trails.
Huh. Eileen?
I think that's an interesting concept. And in fact, we've been doing a series of bike rides, multi-agency bike rides on the weekends to get from behind the desk and live the designs that are currently in place. And one of the thoughts that I had is that wouldn't it be interesting if every person applying for a driver's license was required to ride a bike for a 60-90-day period before getting their driver's license?
Well, that's what, unfortunately, we don't have time for everything, but is to educate people
right.
about bicyclists.
Yeah.
Yes.
And next up, we go to Jader. Jader in Coral Gables. You're up. Hi.
Yes, hi. I'm calling because I just wanted to share my perspective, my experience of what it's been like riding a bike in Miami. Like a lot of callers have expressed, it's kind of hostile to ride bike in Miami. I guess it's part of the culture. I guess Miami's on its way to transitioning to a bike-friendly city. And the question is this, do you have any updates on the underlying project that Miami's trying to implement here?
You talked about the underlying project.
Yes.
Well, they had good news this year that they got $5 million more of funding that'll be immediately available.
But the way you were presenting this, that seems like a drop in the bucket.
It is. That'd be about 1/20th of what is required. But it'll be done piece by piece. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we already have an operating MPATH, or the Miami-Dade County does. So this will be enhancements and improvements to that. So what you'll see is segments of that path being improved as the funding accumulates.
And we're not likely to see the European version with the different grades for bicyclists and pedestrians then.
Well, that's something that we are looking at. It's something.
So what
like
timeline? Can you give us a timeline on any of this? You know, is it just going to happen incrementally in certain municipalities? You do what you can and little by little, you know, and how
that's correct. It is incremental. And I think we're way behind the curve in having enough facilities here. But we already have some. You've got a bike path on the Julia Tuttle. You could name a lot of routes, 250 right. miles already, but it's not nearly enough. And we've heard that frustration out there from people.
We have an emailer. Susan says, adult tricycles. I have an adult tricycle. Love it. I ride on the sidewalks in Coral Springs. I guess they're permitted to there. More and more people are getting them. Have you seen them?
I saw them in Copenhagen.
Oh.
With children in the front to facilitate, you know, transporting more than one person.
Don't you ride your unicycle over the Julia Tuttle behind?
No, not recently.
Let's take another caller, Tony in Miami Beach. Tony, you're up. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to share my experience. I've been getting around on a bicycle here for at least 15 years, and I got in the habit of it from living in Germany. And my experience is I've never had an accident. I've commuted some pretty long distances, but I use, I use the sidewalks to escape when it's bad. I walk the bike when necessary, and I feel it's unsafe. I put the bike on the bus. That's never been brought up. is a very powerful tool to use the bike in, you know, in conjunction with the bus, because you can ride to the places where the bus is running through and get through the main arteries and then get off and have the bike to get around locally, and you don't have the problem of parking. You can also don't get stuck in traffic when you get into the urban areas.
Yeah, good point, Tony. Thank you.
So that's, and I think also I've been told, you know, everybody says, how dangerous it is, and that tries to discourage me. But there are a lot of people out there on bikes that avoid being safe. You have to kind of put your ego in your pocket. You can't get around on a road bike.
Yeah, I just wonder about the people who have ear pods on while they're riding bike in traffic.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Tony, thanks. Yeah.
Thank you, Tony.
Okay, and also one other thing. There's on Google Maps, there are bike routes that are on there. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's very helpful.
You can see how many days it takes to get to Kankakee or whatever you want.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
Thanks.
Okay.
Have a nice day. Bye-bye.
You too. Carolyn writes that she rides her bike to work 3.5 miles once a week. One of the issues that contributes to safety or lack thereof, inconsistency with the type of bike accessible lanes. For example, on A1A in Fort Lauderdale, there's a portion of road that has sharrows, and then it abruptly feeds into a traditional bike lane, which is narrower. If there's a group of bikers in the shallow portion, how are they supposed to safely transition into a narrow bike lane? And these inconsistencies exist all over Fort Lauderdale. You're familiar with Fort Lauderdale.
I'm familiar with that, yes. We do what we can. Every time we redesign, rebuild a road, we look at the cross-section, and we try to fit in a bicycle provision. When you see sharrows, it's because we don't have 5 feet for a bike lane. What we'd really like to have is 5 feet for a bike lane and then 2 feet for a striped-out buffer.
Right.
We'd like to have 7 feet. We find roads where we don't have 7 feet. We don't have 3 feet, but we know we have bicycles. Maybe it's a missing link, and we warn the motorists, you're going to be sharing the road with a bicycle. It's not the best, but it's what we can do. We saw that in Copenhagen, too, a recognition that you live with what you've got, and you can't have the high-type design everywhere.
Eileen Boucle, the executive director of the Miami-Dade Transportation Planning Organization. What's the best way for citizens who want to urge for more bicycle awareness to make their voice heard among their county commissioners and such?
Well, definitely stay engaged. Reach out to your elected officials. Go online and see what are the projects coming up. If you see something coming up in your neighborhood, make sure you attend the public meetings, which all of our agencies conduct when we're doing these studies. Our website is www.miamidadetpo.org.
And there's similar organizations in Broward also that our listeners can go online and find out about those public meetings.
Well, we want to thank you all. Again, we've had several emails about bikers not obeying the traffic rules. Again, if you would just state they're supposed to follow the same rules as automobiles.
They're in the road. They should follow the rules of the road. Wear a bicycle helmet. Take those earbuds out. You need to be listening to your environment as well. Just stay alert and stay alive.
Okay, and that was Jim Wolf. He's District 6 Secretary of the Florida Department of Transportation. Also with us was the Executive Director of the Miami-Dade Transportation Planning Organization, Eileen Boucle, and Manager at the Miami-Dade Transportation Planning Organization, David Henderson, also the Bicycle Pedestrian Coordinator and past President of the Florida Bicycle Association. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And thanks for tuning in this hour. Topical Currents lead producer, Richard Ives. Technical direction from online content producer, Jason Zabka. This edition created by associate producer, Polly Landis.
We apologize to all the emailers and phone calls we couldn't get to.
Of course. As always, it's easy to download a free copy of the program for listening or linking to others. We have info at our radio TV website, WLRN.org. Another way to listen is on the iTunes podcast, and there's more information and links to the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow, it's Social Media and the Law, helpful hints and incisive views from attorney, entrepreneur, professor, and social media author Ethan Wall. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for staying with us today.
Here and Now is next from NPR News.